From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
I get a lot of questions every year about mulch, about how to use it, when to use it, which kind to use. And today we'll talk about all that, but also even more important about what goes on in the soil beneath that mulch layer when you mulch with an organic material. So more in a moment, but first these messages.
Programming and underwriting support from Royal Botanic Gardens, publishers of Kew Pocketbook, Small Gift Books Illustrated, from Kew's vast collection of botanical art. The most recent book, Fungi, about the strange and singular world of mushrooms, toadstools, and their kin. In bookstores now. Underwriting support from Color Blends, supplying top-quality spring-blooming Dutch flower bulbs to landscape professionals and ambitious home gardeners. More information on the web, colorblends.com.
My guest today is Bill Fontenot, Professor Emeritus of Horticultural Science at North Carolina State University and former technical advisor to the U.S. Mulch and Soil Council, the Industry Trade Association. Hi, Bill, and welcome to the program. I'm so glad to have you on. Hello.
Hi, Margaret. Thanks so much. I appreciate the opportunity to chat about one of my favorite subjects.
Me too. You know I'm a mulcher. So enjoyed collaborating with you on a recent New York Times gardening column, which was so popular because, as I said in the introduction, people have lots of mulch questions and concerns. So maybe we start with some of the basics, like how I told you when we worked on that story, all the years I've been mulching every spring, I always thought of it as I watched it sort of break down as if it were an act of, I called it passive composting. And you kind of gave me another mental image that was much better and more accurate, you know, that. Can you tell us about that, that sort of forest imagery?
Well, it actually came about to me only recently. I was thinking about when you have to improve these garden soils and urban soils, that you would have to build on them, and that was the focus. But I learned recently about the way farmers work on their soils, because I heard that when farmers grow things, they always grow two things. They grow their crops and they grow their soil. And that got me thinking about that process. And that's the way it works in nature, in forest. It's the leaf litter. It's the leaf and twigs and things that fall to the ground and the plants that die that are slowly decomposed and are returned naturally to the soil. And so mulching, particularly in organic materials, is just the same kind of process, or can be. Instead of thinking of mulching as something just to retard water loss or to mitigate temperatures, it's really also about building soils on a regular, natural basis.
Right. So, like I had thought composting, but that's, you know, I'm out there with the fork and I'm turning it and it's piling up deep, and it's not like that. It's like that duff layer in the forest, which I thought was so beautiful and so accurate. So what's the science of what goes on in that layer? Like what's, you know, or beneath that layer, what's really happening when it breaks down?
Well, the breakdown is all due to consumption of that material by microbes of all different types, bacteria, fungi, earthworms, all protozoa, all the different things that are, all the microbes that live in the soil. And as they consume those things, it creates the material itself changes from recognizable pieces, like leaves and twigs and things like that, and they become unrecognizable first as they break down, and then they ultimately move into a humus type material, and then from that this black ooey gooey stuff called humates, which is a collection of all kinds of different chemicals, tends to emerge, and it's that those humates themselves that begin to ooze into the soil. They gravity pulls them down into the soil, and they are very sticky as far as soil. Soil has a very high binding process to it, and it attaches itself to these things. And these are soil particles like sand and silt and clay, which are the basis of almost all soils. And as this material attaches to the particles, it literally binds them together. It pulls them closer together in small little aggregates. All right. It makes the little particles into a little bit bigger particles.
Wow.
And once that happens, it also then pulls those particles apart. Those aggregates actually begin to have spaces between them. And actually, it's those spaces that are the important part, because that allows the water to move into the soil. That allows the airspace to be increased. That allows oxygen and carbon dioxide exchange in the soil, and allows for better tilth in the soil itself. So it's a very natural process, and it's the way forests feed themselves. It's just basically with the remnants of those that came before them.
Right. I hate when we think of it as debris, because it's not debris. You know what I mean? Debris sounds like something you want to get rid of, but it's oh my goodness, it's life-giving, this stuff, right?
Well, that's exactly right. Well, it's debris for us. It's like a weed for us is any plant that is not where we want in our garden, but they're
right.
Just regular natural plants that are just trying to get along with everybody
else. Do their thing,
else.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. I remember that you told me when we were doing the Time story, you said, even in urban soils where there's no topsoil layer, this process can begin to build soil in 3 to 4 years. That's pretty miraculous.
Well, and that was through some work that was published a while back. And that if you just take, say you've got bad topsoil at all, or no topsoil, and so you're basically dealing with subsoil layers, you can simply spread an organic mulch out about 3 or 4 layers, 3 or 4 inches thick. And if you just keep that, and you don't touch it, all you do is spread it out. And every year you just make sure that you keep about that same level of, you add a little bit more to the top. You don't turn it. You just
right.
add a little more to the top. And the stuff near the bottom begins to break down. And it will, after 3 or 4 years, if you push that mulch layer away, you will find the soil, instead of being sort of a grayish or light brown color, will actually be dark. That's the humates that it has in it. Will have better tilth in it, and it will actually begin to look like and make soil. And that's with doing absolutely nothing except
right.
putting it on the top.
Right. So you mentioned a couple of the other benefits of mulch, retarding water loss and regulating the temperature of the soil and so forth. What are some of the other benefits? Like, what about with weeds and so forth? How does it help us with that?
Well, it can be a weed barrier for sure, because weeds need to have good contact with the soil particles themselves. They need moisture and the right temperatures in order, of course, to germinate. And so mulches are one of the best ways. If you want to reduce your weeding, the first step is to mulch your soil around the plants, and that way most of the weed seeds will not get a chance to get a foothold on the soil surface themselves.
Right.
So they can actually begin to germinate, but they can't. There's nothing for them to penetrate into, and then they stop.
Right. And some seeds need light to germinate. So if they're under the mulch, I assume they're not going to do as well either.
Well, usually that's very true. Some need light to germinate. Some need darkness to germinate.
Oh,
but
okay.
Many of the seeds that we see do need light. And generally, the smaller the seed, generally the more light they're going to need. Simply because they're probably wind dispersed or dispersed where they just fall on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And so evolutionarily, they're used to having light in that process. So if you've got a layer of mulch on and the seeds do land on the mulch and maybe they fall down a little bit into the mulch itself, then they don't have what they really need. Their environment is not the same.
Right.
As that would be the best for them. So it becomes more harder for them to get a foothold again.
Right. So I'll digress for just a second, sort of horticulturally over here, as someone who enjoys a lot of what I call self zones or volunteer, you know, seedlings, certain biennials and certain annuals that sow around. Like right now in my northern garden, I'm waiting for my flowering tobaccos, my Nicotiana seedlings from the seeds that fell last year to germinate. And that's my free late season color, you know, and then the hummingbirds like it or whatever. And so I don't plant them. They plant themselves. But if I dumped a bunch of mulch on those beds that I hoped that self-sowing was going to happen in too early, I would smother those. The mulch would be serving the purpose you're talking about, but it would be countering what I want. And so I wait. You know what I mean? So it's like learning the timing also, which we're going to talk about. So you want the advantage, but you also don't want to shoot yourself in the foot a little bit sometimes when you have certain areas that you have something.
That's exactly right. Almost every rule that you have in gardening, actually the caveat to that on the last part of it is always, it depends. And in this case, it depends on what you're trying to do. And if you do have these receding materials that you have, then, you know, really thick layers of mulch early is going to not necessarily be a good thing for them.
Yeah.
So waiting for the right time to make that happen.
Yeah. So what makes good mulch, like, and what's the difference between the different materials? I mean, because we're not talking about bags of shredded rubber here or plastic sheeting. We're talking about organic materials, so plant-based materials, right? What makes good mulch?
Yes, generally we're talking about organic materials. They fall into two or three categories. Manures sometimes can be used as mulches, but generally we tend to use that more for nutritional purposes rather than mulching themselves. Most of the mulches that we use organically are plant-based or old plant parts. Everything from the grass clippings to the leaves that land in the fall to yard trimmings. You know, when you're pruning your trees or trimming back your hedges and things like this are great ones. Things like pine straw, if you're in a area that has acidic soils that support pines, these are all common sort of small, quickly reducing materials.
Right.
What we tend to see also a lot is bark as a plant part, both hardwood bark and softwood barks. Further north, maybe up where you are, the hardwood barks tend to be a pretty popular. But the other material that can be used are many of the bark-type products. And the barks are particularly softwood barks and hardwood barks. The hardwood barks are more popular up north, although we have some hardwoods here in the south. But in the south, a lot of it is pine bark particularly. You can size them. The barks don't come in different sizes. It's basically bark, but they screen it, of course, into basically large and medium and smaller sizes. They are popular because they're dark colored to start with. Plus, they tend to break down more slowly, because mulch does have the tendency to degrade, and as it degrades, the levels go down. And so some homeowners are, you spend a little money, you put some bark out or you put some mulch out, and then next year it's almost gone. Well, many people find that to be irritating because they would, then they have to reapply it.
Right.
But as we were talking before, if you think that you're building soil, then that's actually kind of what you're looking for, is you're actually trying to use the mulch as a slow way of adding nutrients in a more natural system.
Right. So you said to me when we did the time story, something like, among all these, this range from the fine textured, using maybe aged or shredded leaves or pine straw versus, say, the larger things like bark and other wood products, the only difference really is the rate of the decomposition. So it's slow, from faster to slower, depending on the texture of the material.
That's usually it. The smaller the particles, the faster they break down in general.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, of course, the last thing that I didn't mention was wood chips. And wood chips themselves, obviously they're becoming very popular in gardens for a number of things. They're used both as a substrate for growing and also as mulches. Now, the wood chips are probably one of the most resilient materials, and they break down slower. The bigger the particle, the slower, not just the slower that they break down, but the larger size actually means that the surface area per square foot of garden space of the surface area mulches is smaller. The smaller the size, the greater the surface area. The greater the surface area of your mulch, the faster it breaks down.
Okay. So one thing that I have to ask then about that, because I'm asked this a lot, when mulching with a wood product, and especially what you just said, like big chunky wood chips, especially ones, you know, people get the free delivery when the arborist comes and then, you know, a tree is shredded up and so forth. Will using a wood product in some way rob nitrogen from the plants, from the soil? When is that a factor? Is that a factor?
Well, it depends on the size of the chips and the materials. For example, you mentioned the arborist stuff. Well, many times, you know, it's not so much the whole trees or the trunks that are ground up, but it's the limbs, and it right. may have leaves and other things in it. Now, if there's green in this material, then it comes with its own nitrogen source in it, and it will break down faster. But if it is big, chunky pieces, it will be slower. And the bigger and chunkier the pieces, the less reactive it is, and the slower it breaks down. But if you start putting more like sawdust, mm-hmm. or things like this, that's highly reactive. And we all know that, you know, the old saying is you don't want to put sawdust in it because it will rob nitrogen. Well, it does. But people sort of say that that's what wood does. And the studies that we've been doing for the last 10 years show that that's not really true. With bigger pieces, they don't do that. And the chips that you see from the arborist are actually 100 times bigger than sawdust. And so they can, if you put a ton of this on or you incorporate it in, there's a chance that you lose a little bit of the fertility. That it will rob a little bit of the nitrogen. But if you are organically applying the nitrogen, you'll probably see it more, not because it's organic, but because in the natural system, organic nitrogen is just, nitrogen from organic sources is just as less. But if you're using a commercial fertilizer, like an 888 or 10-10-10 in your system or anything like that, then you probably won't see much. That's one of the things that we saw in a lot of the wood research that my colleague Brian Jackson and I have been working on for a long time, is people kept warning us that it's a big problem with wood because, you know, wood robs nitrogen. But that actually, it's something to be aware of, but you just, it's not as prevalent as one would think.
So raw and like the sawdust type, put a thick layer of something like sawdust on, that would be a problem. Maybe too much raw wood, but it's not always a problem, and it's
there are gardeners that swear by their wood chips and they grow in nothing, but they don't even put it in the ground. They're using the wood chips for their soil base, and they just spread it on top of their terrible soil,
right.
And they grow in them. So it's not as bad of an issue. If you are organic and say you use compost as your natural nitrogen source, then you might need to put a little more, or it might be a little more of an issue then. But generally,
I see.
It's okay. Not that big of a deal.
So I just want to kind of run through quickly some. You know, I like mulch that isn't too coarse, or for my garden beds, that isn't too coarse nor too fine. You know, I don't like big chunks, and I don't like it to be like compost, because that to me is not a mulch. That's what I put under my mulch if I'm top dressing, screened compost or whatever. But, and I like it to be brown in color. You mentioned that. Like I like it to sort of not scream, I don't like the dyed mulches. But how deep should I apply mulch, and when should we apply, a little bit of the protocol kind of. I do it every spring. I just do it as almost like a religion. You know, it's what I do, and I top up that layer to where it was, and that's my system. But how deep?
Well, you're right in that darker color is what most people are looking for if they're looking for a natural colored type mulch.
Right.
And but all mulches, whether it's, say, hardwood barks or pine barks or things like that, will fade in color.
Yes.
For the next year. And so naturally, putting some more on top just as a little top dressing is not a bad thing. Most people will pick around in their mulch to kind of up the color a bit. But one of the best ways to do that is just to apply a small layer on the top. Now, how much do you apply? Well, generally, you need at least about an inch to get any kind of depth to the mulch to where you begin to see any kind of mitigation in temperature or anything like that. But generally, up to about 3 inches. So 1 to 3, if you want to go 4, that's okay. But generally, 1 to 3 is about what most materials can be used at. And it doesn't really matter whether it's a finer material or a... if it's a very fine material, then an inch of that would probably be enough. But if it is a coarser material, you can easily put 2 to 3 inches in there.
Right. And obviously for gardeners, if they have some tiny little delicate creature about to emerge under it, again, you don't want to put 4 inches on top of that thing that's just about to come. You know what I mean. Judgment, like you said, it depends, right?
Well, exactly. And... if you put 4 inches or 5 inches of a very fine mulch on there, you're going to actually retard some of the gas exchange in the soils underneath it. So it'll be slower for the oxygen to come in and for the CO2 to leave, and so the microbes may or may not, depending on your texture of your soil, be happy. Now, if you got a very sandy soil, it's not going to affect it too much. But under most people that have more silt and clay in their soils, it can be somewhat of a problem. Yeah.
So with the last 2-3 minutes, I want to just ask about when there's too much of a good thing, which is I cannot believe we even have to still speak about it or see it all over the place, the dreaded volcano mulch around trees, those rings and then volcano-shaped piles of mulch against the tree trunk. Can you just tell us quickly why that's bad and well, how the heck did that get invented anyway?
Well, it was very interesting because it was like a kind of a halfway decent idea run amok, because it's in commercial installations where landscape installations, that's a generally very big system and it takes a lot of mulch to cover or a lot of material to of soil amendments to prepare and make better soils. It takes a lot of it to do that, and yards and yards and yards of cubic yards of material. And so many times contractors don't want to spend that money, so they tend not to do much in the way of soil prep.
Right.
Well, in places where the soil is really bad, where the topsoil has been pulled away and it's just subsoil and it might be somewhat compacted, There were situations where the plants actually did better longer if you just took the plastic pot off the plant, you sat it on the soil and you mulched around the root system. You just sort of piled it up around the root system, which kind of made us a big pile of mulch on the base. And the plants actually do better because they stay in the mulch.
Mm.
The roots do. And as long as you water it, it works out pretty well. But then people have taken that to the extreme. They see that, and they see that looks like how to do that. And so they do that in regular soil. But that's the last thing you want to do, is to take a decently prepared soil, plant your plant in there, and then mound up a bunch of mulch around it. Because, lo and behold, the roots do the same thing. They grow into the mulch. And if you've got decent soil, that's where you want them to be.
Right,
but if you mulch around it too high, they literally climb into the mulch itself, because that's where probably the best air and water relationship is for those plants. So under times of stress or water or too much heat, it can become problematic. So mounding it up around the base of a plant is bad news. Plus, it is also not the right environment for around the trunks. You don't find in nature, you don't find things piled up around the base of a plant.
Right.
So in order to prevent disease and to make the roots do what they're supposed to, and that is to move into the soil, then it's not a good idea to mound it around the roots like that.
Well, Bill, I was so glad that you made time today to talk about this on the show. And I'm going to give some links and so forth to like the FAQ page of commonly asked questions and answers from the U.S. Mulch and Soil Council website and some other such resources for people listening to the program who want to learn more. And thank you again. And thanks again for helping me with a time story that was so popular about our favorite topic, mulch. I'll talk to you again soon, I hope.
Oh, thanks, Margaret. Okay, my pleasure. Bye-bye.
Underwriting support from Color Blends, supplying top quality spring blooming Dutch flower bulbs to landscape professionals and ambitious home gardeners. More information on the web, colorblends.com. Programming and underwriting support from Royal Botanic Gardens, publishers of Kew Pocketbooks, small gift books illustrated from Kew's vast collection of botanical art. The most recent book, Fungi, about the strange and singular world of mushrooms, toadstools, and their kin. In bookstores now.
And thanks to all of you for tuning in. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Spotify or on Apple Podcasts or on Stitcher. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening and mulching meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.